Well, the last time we talked a little bit about six different dynamics that we're looking at in this course as we go through things. And we also talked just about different kinds of counseling issues identified in Dr. Gary Collins' book. I want to talk to you for a few moments to begin with today about my own personal experience as a pastor in counseling. I pastor in a church of about 200, so it's not particularly large. I know everyone in my church. I know the children. I know visitors by name after the first week or so. So I deal with pastoral counseling, and I have now for 35 years or so. My experience, which might be different from yours, wherever you are, is that most of the people I help do not come with serious mental problems. I have rarely dealt with schizophrenia or with suicides or terrible abuse. They do come up. They are part of the job, and you never know when. But those aren't the ordinary things that happen in a pastor's life day in and day out. Demonic activity will happen, but it doesn't happen often in my experience. One thing that does happen often that is part of pastoring is that our pastoral care is rarely scheduled. It's not always on the calendar. People show up. They make a phone call. They walk by your office. You meet them on the street. You talk in the entry to the church or in the rows after the service. And something comes up, and pretty soon you're giving them counsel. You're listening to their problems. You're expressing your care for them, probably huddling and praying with them for a few moments. You never know. The interruptions are our ministry. And so we have to prepare for that. It's especially difficult for people who really like to get everything done and are task-oriented, because these things feel like interruptions. But God is in these things, and that's part of the deal. Another thing I learned about counseling is you don't get much choice about it. Some of you feel like this is a part you just love in ministry, helping people one-on-one. And others much prefer the preaching or the larger activities or planning and organizing or evangelizing. But counseling God's people is something we don't get a choice about, whether we like it or it's difficult for us. So it's important that we learn the skills, that we learn how to do this, that we own it as one of the ways God ministers through us to His people. We seek God's wisdom for each one, one person at a time. And it's a wonderful ministry opportunity. Often the things that people remember years later are not the sermons, but it's those times where a pastor met with them privately to talk about a problem and help them see how to live their Christian life more effectively. I think of counseling as one of the pastor's inefficient imperatives. Inefficient imperatives. It's something we must do, but it never feels like the most efficient, timely thing to do. It invariably seems like we could get a lot more done if we didn't have to deal with people one at a time. It seems like we could be so much more effective if we could put our time to study and to preaching. If we could just sit and plan for a few hours and not have to have individuals coming. It seems like it'd be more efficient if we could have a whole group of people to teach, like a class, rather than talk to one person at a time. Even just to eat together with a group of people seems more efficient than giving your time to one person, to driving to a hospital and back, to going to someone's home and back. That takes a lot of time. But efficiency has never been God's primary goal, at least our definition of it. It isn't a very good pastoral master. So we have to prepare ourselves for these interruptions, for these individual situations that might take a lot of our time. It's the way God works. God often works on a small scale. Think how many of Jesus' important meetings were one at a time, one person at a time. Well, let's change a little bit and talk about some things that make a good counselor. This is just, I'm going to talk about three things. These aren't all the things that make a good counselor, just three that have come to my mind that I want to share with you. The first thing is this. You need to know yourself in order to be a good counselor. You need to know yourself in order to be a good counselor. Henri Nouwen was a counselor, a pastoral care leader, a thoughtful writer. And one of his most important books is called The Wounded Healer. We'll show you a quote on the screen, but he says in this quote that a minister, a pastor, has to come to terms with his own loneliness inside. We all have a part of us that is lonely, that's isolated from other people. And we have to be at home in who we are, even with these weaknesses that we have. When we are at home in who we are and what God is doing in our lives, then we can become a guest house for other people. And they can come into our lives and find some space to heal. They don't come to us as healers ourselves. We're not really the healers. God is the healer, and He lets people stay, you might say, in us. They come into our lives, we welcome them in, we sit with them. Sometimes we just listen, sometimes we are empathizing, and sometimes we are able to give counsel. But we are available to them like a guest room, so they can come and find a safe place to heal. When we counsel someone, something that's easy to forget is that both the counselor and the counselee are part of the process. You are not neutral. It's not like when you go to your doctor and he listens and gives you a prescription and then you never think about and he never thinks about you. Counseling is a relationship. If you're not healthy, then the counseling relationship won't be healthy. If you're angry, that anger will come into the relationship. If you're insecure, it'll show up. If you are Christ-like, it'll work in that relationship. One of my students was reading the Gary Collins book that we've mentioned, Christian Counseling, and he noticed in there, as you will when you read, the importance of the counselor's well-being. You have to have a certain health in order to help someone else. He said there were a couple things that stood out to him as he read. One, he would bring up the need for the counselor to know his or her own feelings and views about the subject that somebody comes to you about. For example, if someone comes to you about their depression, and you think depression is the sign of a weak person, a person who doesn't trust God, well, then that's going to show up in your counseling. If you're somebody who says, who in your heart thinks, I've been depressed, I know what that feels like, I understand what this is like, then you'll counsel in an entirely different way. That's true of all sorts of matters. Someone talks about their family, their father, and you had a terrible experience with your father, that will start to play in. So you need to know who you are. You can't make those things go away, but you need to know who you are and recognize the pluses and the minuses, the good and the bad in that. It's also important, in the same idea, for us to know our own biases and our own feelings about things. Sometimes in counseling, you'll hear about something that really is hard for you, a fear, a bad experience, something that kind of sets you off inside. And you need to understand those things so that you can use them in counseling. You have to either sometimes pray about that yourself, to ask God to give you perspective and maturity and distance, or in other cases you can say, when I went through this, it felt like such and such to me. When I went through it, I felt very sad, or I would find myself getting angry unexpectedly. Does that happen to you? And then they have a point of connection with you. Now, there are a number of ways that you can find out how well you know yourself. And I'm going to just bring out a few of them. We won't talk about them too long, but just a few things. We'll begin with something you'll see on your screen called the Johari window. The Johari window is a box with four boxes inside of it. And it's a simple way to help us remember what we know about ourselves and what other people know about ourselves. So in the first box, this is a category of things that are known to me and known to other people. So this is public. What you know about me and what I know about me, that's public. We all know this. We all know this counselor has a sense of humor or that he's very tender-hearted. Next to that is a part unknown to me but known to other people. That's hidden. I don't see it. Other people know that I'm insecure or that I get angry easily or that I forget and lose my place in my thinking. They know that. I don't know it. Then there is another hidden area where it's not known to other people, but I know it. It's not known to other people, but I know it. So I know that when you speak about a certain subject, it makes me anxious, but you don't know that. And finally, there's a part of our lives that you don't know and nobody else knows. It's just unknown, but there are parts of us that operate on how we function in relationships that we don't understand. So it's just important to realize that there are these different dimensions going on as we visit with anyone.
Have you benefited from our teaching ministry? Have you found TVS videos helpful and relevant? Please consider supporting us with your prayers and financial gifts. For more information, visit tvsseminary.com.
There's one more important thing I want to stress to you about my experience with counseling. And that is that counseling, in a way, is like washing someone's feet. It's a service, a humble service. Nobody watches you. Nobody knows if you're really good at it. You often don't get an immediate reaction. People don't change quickly. It's a kind of lonely, selfless job. Some of you who listen to this love to counsel or will learn to love it. For some, it'll always be difficult. Counseling has never been my most favorite part of pastoring. I like getting things done, checking them off my list. I like preaching to people. Counseling is harder for me, and part of that is because I have to learn to be still. So it's not my favorite thing, but it's important. And one reason I do it is because it's a way I wash other people's feet. I serve people with a need for Jesus' sake. When I do this, when you do this, you bring Jesus' best to them. Jesus works through you. He helps you with this. So in an amazing gift, you bring Jesus' patience, His understanding, His grace, His authority. When you help somebody else, you get to bring something of Jesus to other people, and they think of it that way. They think of their pastor as the spokesman, as the representative of Jesus in ways they don't think about other people. Through us, Jesus asks the counselee, the person from our church, what would you like me to do for you? Do you remember that in Mark chapter 10, Jesus says that two times. One time, two of the disciples come to him. They say, there's something we'd like. He says, what would you like me to do for you? And they want to sit on his right and left side. In another case, it's someone who is crippled or blind. I forget which it is. And he says, what would you like me to do for you? And they tell him they'd like to be healed. Well, when people come to us, we are spokesmen for Jesus. Jesus saying, what would you like me to do for you? Sometimes what they ask is foolish, and we want to help them come to understand how to think better about their desires. And other times, what they come to seek is just exactly what the Lord would like to give them, and we sort of take them by the hand and walk them in to those blessings that God has promised and that God would like to give them through the Lord Jesus Christ. One thing I love is how I grow when I counsel. Like I said, it isn't always my favorite thing to do, but I grow in counseling in a remarkable way. Sometimes the people who come to see me actually understand things better than I do. They actually counsel me. They tell me things that they have thought about as a Christian, how they have prayed, how they have dealt with hard things. And I come to realize how great the grace of God is in them. And I learn from them, and then I can share what I've learned with other people. Other times, I find as I'm helping them, I'm sort of surprised at the wisdom and the grace that God pours through me to them. I think of it sometimes like a funnel. And you pour something through a funnel and it all goes through, but some of it sticks to the side. And I think of it like that sometimes. So those are some of the reasons I love to counsel. I get to keep what I learn.